of Higgs to glue glue. This is a very important loop-level process for producing the Higgs. It's also one of the leading decays, although it's very difficult to see this experimentally. And I just want to recap very briefly where we left off on Friday. The goal is to calculate the decay rate for this process, and so far we're computing this diagram. But there's also another diagram, which we haven't even touched on yet. Okay. And we called this matrix element IM1. And we have IM2, and of course we want to calculate the total, like so. Okay, so we had to remember all of the tricks that we needed for computing loop diagrams. it's straightforward to do. So we just write down the full expression. Then to perform the loop integral, you express the integral in terms of an integral over Feynman parameters, which allows us to shift the momentum k into a new momentum L. And we can do the loop momentum over L, throwing away a few terms which don't end up contributing, to get a final expression, which is just an integral over the Feynman parameters. So here's what we had at the end of the day for M1. It was minus I over 16 pi squared. We had gs squared over the vev v. We had the trace of ta tb. We had epsilon mu of p, epsilon nu of p prime. We had the quantity 4 p1, I wrote it down in P1 and P2, but I meant to write it in terms of P nu and P prime mu minus 2 mh squared eta mu nu. And then we're left with an integral over Feynman parameters, which can be written as follows. So an integral from 0 to 1 dx, integral from 0 to 1 minus x dz, 1 minus 4 x z over 1 minus xz times the quantity mh squared over mt squared. Okay, so this is what I had before. I think in the previous expression I had a factor of mt squared multiplying everything, and so I just brought that through to write the denominator in a form like this. Okay? So here we go. Let's keep going from here. In general, you can evaluate this loop integral into some closed expression form. The integral is a little bit complicated. So let's just consider a simplified limit in which the top quark mass is much heavier than the mass of the Higgs. So we're going to consider the limit that mt is much, much greater than mh. It's not really well satisfied, of course. This is only 173, and this is around 125. You do slightly better because you see you have the squares. So if I square it, it's a little better, but still, not too good. But in any case, when you make this approximation and plug it into the integral, it actually doesn't do too bad for the purposes of doing the integral. So we're going to stick with it. And if you want to do better, you can just evaluate the numerical, the integral on your own. You don't have to do it numerically. Okay, so in this limit, the integral dx dz And then I just have, so that means I can just throw away this term here. And I just have 1 minus 4xz. And that whole thing ends up just being 1/3 when you integrate it. There are some other factors floating around, okay? So we have the trace of TA TB. This is just 1/2 delta AB. The other thing that you can show, which we haven't looked at, is that IM2 is equal to IM1. So actually, by including M2, it's actually just a factor of 2. And I guess we can see that from the expression for M1 explicitly, because to get to M2 from M1, I think you just need to reverse P and P prime and mu and nu. And so the whole thing should be symmetric under that, which it is. Okay. So then the total matrix element is as follows. I have minus I. Now I can write gs squared as alpha s times 4 pi. One of the 4 pi, the 4 pi will cancel one of the 4 pi's in the denominator. And so the numerical factor I get in front will be alpha s over 3 pi v. The 3 comes from the 1/3 over there. So then I have epsilon mu p, epsilon nu p prime, and then I have p nu p prime mu minus mh squared over 2 eta mu nu times delta ab. Okay. One thing it's, yeah.
The fact that M1 equals M2 just comes from the fact that, like, if I swap A and B and swap mu and nu, I get the same answer.
And also P and P prime.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so here's our expression for the matrix element. It's always good when you compute a really complicated matrix element like this to check that it makes sense at the end of the day. And so one check you can do is check that it satisfies our expectations from gauge invariants. So since we're decaying to external gauge bosons, which are massless, we should be able to just use the Ward identity, and which means that if we swap one of these polarization vectors for its corresponding momentum, then the whole expression should be 0. So what you can check, there are two checks to do. You can swap epsilon mu to p mu, and epsilon nu to p prime of p prime to p prime nu, that if you do either of these things, that this whole expression should give you 0. Okay, so that's a consequence of gauge invariance. There's a check, and so okay, I claim that that is satisfied. All right, so the next, we want to calculate the decay rate. So let's square the matrix element and sum over all of the polarizations and other quantum numbers. All right, so we have alpha s over 3 pi v squared. We have delta ab and delta ab. So remember, A and B are summing over the generators of SU3. They go from 1 to 8. And so when I do this, I'll get 8. And then I have P nu P prime mu minus MH squared over 2 eta mu nu. And then, okay. So when I sum over the polarization vectors, I'll just get the metric tensor for these, for this one, and metric tensor for that one. And so that means when I use that metric tensor that appears, all I have is p nu p prime mu minus mh squared over 2, eta mu nu. All right. So this whole thing is 8 alpha s squared over 9 pi v squared. And OK, so when I contract these two together, I will get 0. Is that right? I think so. All right. When I contract this one, and also this one and this one, I'll get the same results. I'll get minus 2 times mh squared over 2 times p dotted into p prime. And then for the last term, I'll get mh to the 4th over 4 times eta mu nu. Eta mu nu is another factor of 4. OK, so I just need to calculate. So I can use the fact that 2p dot p prime is equal to mh squared. And so then this whole thing is equal to 4 alpha s squared mh to the 4th over 9 pi squared b squared. OK, so that's the matrix element squared. Now we'll plug it in and compute the decay rate.
Where did the extra factor of pi show up?
Pi. Let's see. Yeah, I think I forgot a factor of pi down here. Let's see if I can reach that. Is that right? So, thank you. It's important to get all these factors right. Otherwise, we'll calculate the wrong answer, and we'll disprove the standard model again. We want to prove it, that it's true. So we want to calculate this. So we just need to plug it in, the matrix element squared. We do the integral over the momenta. It's straightforward to do. I'll save you the details and just write down the answer. What you get is alpha s squared mh cubed over 64 pi cubed b squared. And the only slightly subtle thing we needed to do is we just needed to divide by 2. Because we have identical gluons in the final state, when we sum over all of their momenta, we're double counting. So we needed to divide by 2 to avoid double counting. Identical final state gluons. And of course, the reason we had to do that is because when you integrate over momenta, we counted one gluon with a certain momentum going this way, let's say. And then when you integrate over momenta, you're also counting the case where the other gluon has exactly the same momenta. OK? And so we need to divide by 2 because those are actually not distinct states. All right, so here's the final answer. And you can plug in numbers. It's 0.23 MeV. And so this ends up being around 5.7% of the total branching ratio. There's an asterisk, because what we've calculated is just the lowest order contribution for Higgs to glue glue, which means that it is just leading order in alpha s, which in this case is just alpha s squared. But there are alpha s cubed corrections. And so those QCD corrections enhance Higgs to glue glue by around 60%. OK. All right.
Can you remind me, please, what is V?
V is the Higgs VeV.
Oh, okay.
So it's in our notation, it's 246 GeV. Okay, so I just want to ask, we computed the contribution from the top quark to the loop, but what about the other quarks that can contribute? And in particular, obviously, the other quarks don't satisfy this inequality where we assume that they are much, much heavier than the mass of the Higgs. So for the light quarks, so we have MU, MD, MS, MC, and MB are all much, much lighter than the mass of the Higgs. The heaviest is the bottom, which is around between 4 and 5 GeV, is much, much lighter than 125 GeV. Well, if you evaluate the loop integral in that case, obviously, it doesn't make sense to throw away what's in parentheses, so you can keep it. And you can work at leading order in MQ. Here, MQ is equal to one of these masses. So we can just write it down for the two cases. It's 1/3 if MQ is much, much greater than MH. So that was the case of the top quark. And if it's not, in the other cases, it's 1/2 mq squared over mh squared times the log squared of mh squared over mq squared for mq much, much less than mh. So this would be q is equal to u, d, s, c, and b. All right, so in the case of the light quarks, you can see that this whole expression would go to zero in the limit that MQ goes to zero. So the light quarks give a subleading contribution to these loop diagrams. Okay, any questions on the decay? Well, I guess I don't really have it in my notes, but I can just make a few comments on Higgs to gamma-gamma, Higgs to two photons. So this is the other very important loop level diagram. And this, in fact, was the way that the Higgs was discovered originally in 2012. It was through Higgs to gamma-gamma, even though the rate for Higgs to gamma-gamma is very small. It's just the fact that this signature is very clean to see experimentally compared to the backgrounds. So if you wanted to compute this, you'd have to write down what the diagrams are. And the first diagram is very similar to what we just calculated. So you have a top loop here. And again, for the same reason that the top only contributes or gives the largest contribution to the gluon loop, it's the same for Higgs to gamma-gamma, the top that gives the leading contribution. And then, OK, there's another one with the crossed photon legs. So let me write it down here. But we also have other states as well, which can be in the loop here. In particular, we want to put the states that carry electric charge, are massive, so they have a large coupling to the Higgs, which are the W. So we have loops involving the W boson. And so we have loops like this. And you also have loops like this. And in unitary gauge, which is the gauge that we've worked on in this course, these are the diagrams that contribute. If you work in other gauges, there are other diagrams. And so it, in principle, you could compute these things. It ends up being very complicated to compute, namely because these diagrams are very annoying to compute because the propagators are so complicated. But can be done. Okay. So the next topic that we're going to do is we're going to talk about Higgs production. So we computed Higgs to glue glue, and we're going to use this to calculate how many Higgs bosons get produced at a hadron collider.
What exactly is annoying
about the
propagators? Are they just normal bosons?
Yeah, so the issue is that they have a lot of different momentum dependencies in them. So I just remind you that, for example, the W propagator would be like minus I over k squared minus mw squared. So you have eta mu nu minus k mu k nu over mw squared. And so really the annoying part is this term here. So it ends up that you have to do many different types of loop momentum integrals to be able to evaluate this. So it's not technically complicated. It's just a lot of algebra. Okay, so now we're going to talk about production of the Higgs boson. We already calculated the different ways in which it can decay. And we're going to focus on the LHC, which is proton-proton collisions. And the previous runs of the LHC were at center of mass energies of 7, 8, and 13 TeV. And so what you want to do is calculate what is the cross section. And how many Higgs bosons do we produce? Of course, both of those two things are related. So we're going to talk about the production mechanisms. And we'll mention them in descending order. So the first ones will be the most important and give you the largest cross sections. So the first one, and it's going to be the only one we're going to discuss, is gluon fusion, abbreviated as GGF. And so what happens is you have your protons, which have a I'm just drawing sort of a cartoon sketch of the valence quarks in the proton. They scatter by emitting a gluon. And the other proton also scatters by emitting a gluon from one of the quarks. And the quarks fuse, the gluons fuse together to produce a Higgs boson. So this is an inverse decay, where you have two gluons going together through a top loop, which I just drew as a dot here, into a Higgs boson. So this is a GG to H inverse decay. This particular production process probes the Higgs coupling to the top quark. It also probes, in terms of new physics, any new state that interacts with the Higgs, which is strongly interacting, will also contribute to this process. Okay, process number two is called vector boson fusion. Or VBF. So in this case, you have two quarks inside of the proton, let's say a U and a D, which both emit Ws. So this one will emit a W plus, this one will go to a D, this one will emit a W minus, and turn itself into a U. And the two W bosons fuse together to produce the Higgs boson. Or you can have a similar process, where now you have U or D, and it stays the same. And you produce the Higgs boson by fusing together Z bosons. OK, so you can have either of these. This is vector boson fusion. Number three is vector boson, and by this I just mean the W or the Z, not the photon, associated production. So this is abbreviated as WH or ZH. And so the process looks like this. You have a U and a D bar or a U bar, which goes into a W plus or minus. And the W plus or minus just spits off a Higgs boson, like this. All right, so the one here would be off shell, and then it produces an on shell W and an on shell Higgs. Or you can have the same thing, but with the Z. Okay, so it's Higgs bosons produced in association with a W or Z boson. And lastly, you have what's called a top associated production. which is known as TTH. And you have so the first step is to produce a TT bar pair. And here's one QCD process that can produce a TT bar pair. You fuse two gluons together into an S-channel gluon, and then it splits into a TT bar. And then either the top or the antitop spits off a Higgs boson, like so. So this is the last process. And so you would produce a Higgs boson with a TT bar pair. So I'm all on board. So all of these different production processes are probing slightly different combinations of couplings. All right? For gluon-gluon fusion, you're probing the top coupling, but you're also probing new physics couplings as well, if there are additional states that carry color, which also interact with the Higgs. It can also contribute through a loop like this. And so you can also probe those couplings. With the top associated production, you're only probing the coupling to the top, all right? Because you have to produce a TT bar pair. And so new physics is not going to contribute to that one, all right? And then for vector boson associated production and also VBF, you're probing the Higgs coupling to the massive vector bosons, the W and the Z. All right. So what we want to do now is take our results for Higgs to glu-glu and use that to compute the cross-section for gluon-gluon fusion to produce a Higgs boson from proton-proton collisions. So what we'll start out by computing is the parton level cross-section. We're taking two gluons and producing a Higgs boson. So we have 1 over 2 E1 times 2 E2. E1 and E2 will just be the energies of the initial state gluons times the magnitude of VREL, the relative velocity. And then I just have to integrate over the final state momentum for the Higgs. So there's just one state. Then I have to square in some of the squared matrix element. So the sum goes over spins, and it also goes over colors. And then I need to divide by the corresponding factor, because I need to average over all of the initial states. Okay? So each gluon is labeled by a color index A, which goes from 1 to 8. So I need to divide by 8 for each gluon. Also, each gluon has two polarization states. So I need to divide by 2 for each gluon. So I'll have 1 over 2 times 8 squared, since I have two gluons. So we'll do this in the center of mass frame. So this tells me that VREL is equal to 2. And also 4 E1, E2 will just be the center of mass energy in the parton, at the parton level. And also in the center of mass frame, the energy of the Higgs boson that gets produced has to be at rest in the center of mass frame. So this will just be mh. Okay, so I can use three of the delta functions to eliminate these three integrals. And I have the following. So I have 1 over 2 s hat. That's just this vector here. I have 1 over 2 mh from here. Then I have 1, 2 pi left over. And I have a delta function left over, which is mh minus e1 minus e2. I have 1 over 16 squared. And then I have to sum over the matrix element. So I want the matrix element for glue glue goes to the Higgs. But I can use time reversal invariance to relate that from to Higgs goes to glue glue. All right. At least in the standard model, it does satisfy time reversal invariance. The other thing I need to do is I need to introduce an extra factor of a half. Or sorry, not a half, extra factor of 2. And the reason was I divided by 2 when I computed Higgs to glue glue because I wanted to not overcount identical gluons in the final state. Now, in the initial state, the gluons are not identical anymore. One gluon has momentum p1, the other gluon has momentum p2. So they're distinguished by their momenta. I'm not integrating over their different orientation. Okay? So I need to multiply by this extra factor of 2. Okay, and lastly, I'm just going to write down how we related the width, x to glue glue, to the matrix element, 1 over 16 pi mh times the sum over the matrix element squared. So I'm going to use this to relate the matrix element squared to the width times this factor of 16 pi mh. So here's the parton cross section. It is 2 times 8 pi squared gamma Higgs to glue glue over 16 squared s hat. And then I have this delta of mh minus e1 plus e2. And so this quantity here, of course, is the square root of the center of mass energy. So the square root of s hat. So I can write this whole thing as pi squared the rate for Higgs to glue glue, 16 squared s hat times delta of square root of s hat minus mh. Okay, so let's rewrite this delta function in a little bit more user-friendly way. So this is delta of s hat minus mh squared times 2 times the square root of s hat, which is just mh times 2 times delta of s hat minus mh squared. Okay, so yeah.
I was wondering why there's still 16 squared in the denominator.
You're right, just 16, thank you. OK, so we're just going to use this simple rule for rewriting the delta function. And now we have our final result for this, pi squared gamma Higgs to glue glue over 8 mh times delta of s hat minus mh squared. So we also use the fact that s hat is just mh squared. OK. So that's the parton level cross section. Now we're going to put it together to form the hadron level cross section.
We're working in the Higgs center of mass now.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Large Hadron Collider is not necessarily working in the Higgs center of mass, right? So this
well, yeah, so
square
root
of S being 7, 8, or 13 tera electron volt doesn't have anything to do with this one.
That's right. It doesn't. So the LHC is 7, 8, or 13 TeV in the center mass frame of the beam at the hadron level. Okay? Here, we're talking about the center mass frame at the parton level. So you're right, they can be different. But you'd expect them just to be different along the boost direction of the beam under which cross sections are invariant. OK, so here's what we want to compute. So we're going to compute PP goes to Higgs x. For now, the x just means anything in the hadronic final states. So this will be similar to what we did before. We don't care about the details of how the strongly interacting states will hadronize in the final state. We're just going to sum over all possible hadronic states. So let me write down the cartoon picture. So we have our proton, and I'll call the momentum p1. And there's a gluon here. And we have another proton with momentum p2. And there's another gluon that produces the H. And in general, these states will undergo fragmentation, hadronization. They'll produce all sorts of different types of hadronic final states. All right? The events are, in general, very, very messy. And we just want to sum over all of that complicated details. Okay. So when we do that, and we use the parton model, we can just sum, or I should say, we can take advantage of factorization to write the following expression. So all we need to compute is the parton level cross section for glue glue goes to Higgs. And then we just need to weight this with the probability of finding a gluon with a given momentum fraction, call it x1, and another gluon with another momentum fraction, call it x2. Inside of the proton. And then we sum over all possible different momenta that are allowed. So in other words, we take the parton level cross section, and we multiply it by the corresponding PDFs for the gluons. And then we want to integrate over the corresponding momentum fractions, like so. So let's define what all of the quantities are. We have P1, capital P1 and P2 are the initial proton momenta. I'll define little p1 and p2 as the initial parton, in this case gluon, momenta. And also x1 and x2 are the momentum fractions. So I'd write little p1 or 2 is equal to x1 or 2 times big p1 or 2. And it only makes sense to write this sort of relation in a frame in which the proton is very boosted, which for the LHC, of course, is true. All right, so now we're going to evaluate this. So the first thing is we want to relate S hat to S, which is the center of mass, the energy squared in the hadron level collisions. So in the limit that we can neglect the proton masses, this is just 2 times P1 dotted into P2. And so this is equal to x1 times x2 times 2 little p1 dotted into little p2. And so this quantity here is just s hat in the limit that we can neglect the parton masses. But the gluons is, of course, true. So this is just x1 times x2 times s hat. OK? So now we can write our cross-section in terms of hadron-level quantities. So we have the cross-section for PP goes to H plus anything is an integral over X1. Times an integral over X2. And now times the parton level cross-section, which is pi squared gamma Higgs to glue glue divided by 8 mh. And so that's delta of x1, x2s. So this is what I wrote before as a tat minus mh squared. Yeah.
By x1 and x2, and p1 and p2,
small,
isn't the inverse?
Ah, yes, sorry about that. Yeah, you're right. Sorry about that. Yeah, I wrote this totally backwards. Thank you. And this is yeah, great, thank you. OK, so obviously I needed it this way, because this was s hat. And I plugged in for in terms of s. All right. So so maybe just to remind you that s is something that's fixed once you have your given beam energy. It's whatever, 7, 8, or 13 TeV, or maybe higher. S hat depends, right? Depends on the momentum fractions. So at every event, it could be different. Doesn't depend, not determined by the beam energy. All right, so let's, we still have an extra delta function. And so let's use the delta function to evaluate one of the x integrals. We'll do the x2 integral. So let's define the following quantity. Tau, which is mh squared over s. And so then I can write delta of x1, x2, s minus mh squared is 1 over s times delta x1, x2 minus tau. Or, and then I can factor out the x1 to be s x1 delta of x2 minus tau over x1. So now when I do, the x2 integral, I just set x2 equal to tau over x1. But I need to be a little careful about what the allowed range of the integral is. So we must have x2 between 0 and 1. So that means that tau over x1 has to also be between 0 and 1. So this tells us that tau has to be between 0 and x1. So it tells us that x1 has to be larger than tau. All right? So in general, x1 can have the following range between 0 and 1, but only the region where x1 is greater than tau contributes. Okay? So we must write this as x1 has to be between 1 and tau. Okay? So we shouldn't integrate over the full range of x1 anymore. We have to write it only as an integral from tau to 1 instead of from 0 to 1. Now we have the cross section. Sigma pp goes to hx. And this is an integral from tau to 1. Dx1 over x1. We have fg x1, fg of x2, which is tau over x1. And then times pi squared gamma h takes to glue glue over 8mgs. Okay, so this is the final expression for the cross-section. Of course, you can't actually compute a number without knowing the gluon PDFs. This part you can compute, of course. Okay, so in general, the way you get the gluon PDFs is by fitting to data. So you need to plug in some numerically guided function into here to be able to evaluate it. But you can take an ansatz, which may somewhat accurately describe the data. So there's one that's provided in Peskin and Schroeder, which is 8 over x times 1 minus x to the 7th power. So this is really just a guess. It's not meant to be accurate. So it's just a function that they pick out of thin air that seems to do not a terrible job in reproducing the data. So let's just use this, and we'll just plug in some numbers and see where we are. Okay, so we'll compute at the LHC. So that just means we have PP bar collisions. And I'll make a little bit of a table here. So we'll do different center of mass energies. So we'll do 7 TeV, 8 TeV, and 13 TeV. And so first we'll do the Peskin and Schroeder ansatz. And now I'll compare that to the actual Fg of x. And then what we'll actually do is I'll compare that as well to higher order calculations. Yeah?
Isn't Fg of x like a probability density?
Yeah,
for there being a quark in the proton with a certain momentum?
Yeah, gluon in the proton.
Doesn't that thing integrate to infinity?
It could.
So the probability of there being a gluon in a proton is infinity.
No, okay. It might be, to be honest. It could be.
A probability, which is infinity.
Yeah, it might be. So bad things go. uncomfortable things happen at if you try to extrapolate it to very low momentum. Okay? So there's actually sort of an infinite number of very low energy gluons in the proton.
Yeah, but the probability is still not higher than one.
Yeah, I'm just trying to avoid your question and say it's a subtle issue. When you compute this, the thing that we really want to take away is whether or not this does an accurate fit to the data-inspired value of this in the region of x in which is going to be contributing to our collision. Okay. So if it's a reasonable fit in the region of x that contributes to this integral, then we'll be able to say, OK, that's fine. I'm not advocating that you go home and write a paper based off this. It's just an ansatz. OK, but there's subtle issues that happen in the infrared regime in QCD. OK. We won't get infinity when we compute the cross sections. here's what we get. So I'm going to compare the Peskin and Schroeder ansatz for Fg. And we're going to be plugging in our parton level cross section, which again, we just computed at leading order in alpha s. And I'm going to compare that to the actual value of the parton, the PDF, the gluon, also at leading order. Plugging in the data-inspired value for this function. And then I'm also going to compare it to, OK, what happens if you use the actual Fg and you go to sort of the state-of-the-art level of calculations in computing this process, which is not just next to leading order, but next to leading order. In QCD. So here's what we get for our numbers. This is 5.3 picobarn. This is 6.8 picobarn. And this is 15.7. Picobarns. When we do this, this is 10.5 picobarn. This is 11.4, and this is 14.8. And then this is 15.1, 19.3, and 43.9, all in units of picobarn. Maybe you don't know what a picobarn is. The one barn is it's a cross section, so it's units of area. It's 10 to the minus 24 centimeters squared. And a picobarn is 10 to the minus 12 barns. So it's 10 to the minus 36 centimeters squared. OK, so cross sections are small. typical cross sections that involve weak physics, and the Higgs boson, of course, is a weak particle, are of order picobarns. So here you can see, the Peskin and Schroeder ansatz doesn't do a great job of reproducing the data, sort of at the factor of two level. And then you can also see the importance of going to higher orders in alpha S. You get sort of order one corrections, in some cases larger than that, going from leading order to sort of state of the art. So we're going to stop here for today, and we're going to continue a little bit more on Tuesday.